And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Good morning and welcome to the Daily Ding. Happy Tuesday morning. We are going to get you caught up on a lot of blowouts, but one unbelievable game from Monday night in the association. I am Jared Weiss. I am joined by Trayvon Edwards. What's Gucci, Trey?
What's going on, brother?
You know, it's a Monday night tradition that the games are blowouts, but thankfully, the last one was the best one. And we had the Wizards beating the Lakers in overtime. That's right. The best team in the league beats the second best team in the league. 127 to 124. The Wizards have won four in a row, all against really good teams. And they look scary because we had Russell Westbrook with 32 points, 14 rebounds, and 9 assists on 13 for 25 shooting in 44 minutes. And, of course, Bradley Beal, 33 points, 6 assists, 7 rebounds on 12 for 24 shooting. The Wizards were unbelievable in at least the fourth quarter in overtime of this game because they were getting their asses kicked for pretty much the entire game. And then the third quarter, they just kind of made that furious run. But let's get to the overtime because that overtime was just insane of just Russ and Beal just attacking and getting to the shot wherever they wanted it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know where to start, man. 65 points combined in that backcourt. You know, you just get a ball to Bradley Beal and let him work. And it was a long night for Alex Caruso. You know, Bradley Beal getting to the sweet spot where he wanted to go and just knocking it down. And then obviously Russ showing up. Some questionable plays, but still, you know, at the end, icing the deal. But a bad loss for the Lakers, man. I'm going to just put it out there like that.
So I wouldn't say it's a bad loss for the Lakers. I would say it's a bad loss for LeBron James. And I want to save that just because I don't want to we don't want to glaze over what Beal and Westbrook did too quickly. They combined 6 for 7 from the field at overtime. Davis Bertans is the only one that even attempted another shot. Although there was some sort of weird, crazy alley-oop attempt to Robin Lopez that where he tried to like set the ball like it was a volleyball, but he got fouled. And I never saw a good replay angle to understand what the hell happened there. But I mean, this was really a lot of just like great ball movement in the half court by Washington, combined with just incredible isolation attacking by Beal, who really just has hit the peak of isolation play in the NBA right now.
Yeah, easily like one of the best two guards in the league. Just not too many. He's only stopping himself. I mean, and the best way you can kind of do it is contain, and he's just been on fire, you know, and they've decided to put things together and play some good basketball and get some quality wins as of late. So I like the direction that, you know, Scott Brooks and the team is going in. And obviously it's not going to just shake it up and get them in the direction of the playoffs because of such a rough start. But, you know, you got to be hopeful for what you see, especially off a win like tonight.
That is true. And I mean, Denny Avdija, he had that massive three to help send it to overtime. Rui, I thought, had another good game. Rui continues to play pretty well. And of course, Robin Lopez going 5 for 8 from you. If you can never get that out of Robin Lopez, that's obviously a pretty good sign. And I mean, looking at the standings now, you have the Wizards are only 2 games back, I believe, if that's the fully updated standings, of the Bulls in the 8th spot. They're only a game and a half out of the play-in spot for 10. I mean, they're 3 games back of the Celtics in the 6th seed, so they could even, you know, really avoid the play-in tournament if they wanted to. I mean, it seems like the Wizards turning a corner here to actually being a good basketball team now that they've won 5 straight.
It's the East, man. Anything's possible. The East is just, you know, it's a dice roll. You know, like a team could run off and start playing well, or they can drop really bad. And, you know, who expected the Knicks and the Bulls to be actually in the cusp of the playoffs? And now if you tell me the Wizards are going to make the playoffs come April, I wouldn't even be surprised, man.
Classic Wizard season. They're the worst team in the NBA and they make the playoffs, right? But let's talk about LeBron, because LeBron, I mean, if you look at the box score, 14 for 29, 31 points, 13 dimes, 9 boards, 8 turnovers. It's a clear indicator of a problem. 2 for 10 from 3, it's a clear indicator of a problem. But those of you that watch the game probably noticed that he was horrible. Like, it looked like he was sabotaging the game, basically, really at the end in crunch time, where he's taking these terrible pull-up 30-footers. I mean, for the attempted game winner, he just pulled up all of a sudden from 37 feet. It's this idiotic shot. On defense, he was literally standing in the paint, watching guys drive right next to him, and just literally stood there without moving. I mean, it was the kind of stuff that would get you pulled from the game if you're any pretty much anyone in the NBA besides LeBron. I mean, are you concerned about the King looking a little bit washed right now?
No, I'm not too concerned. I think that he's developed a bad habit, though. You know, when he's rolling, he's rolling. But I think the threes, that's not a great thing to pick up right now. The 2 for 10, nah. Especially with no Anthony Davis, you got to get to the rack. You know, and I think obviously with age and things of that nature, and they've created a little cushion when they play against certain teams, so he has that leeway to take shots and make them. And, you know, but you can't shoot 20% on the night and continue to take that shot. He's not a consistent 3-point shooter like that. And although he has improved as he's getting older and trying to maintain his body, this is not something that he needs to just rely on. And it was one possession where he was trying to set up a guy and then they just sent the blitz and he ended up throwing a turnover. It's just bad. You know what I mean? So overall, definitely, I don't consider him washed. I mean, that's very uncharacteristic for him to have 8 turnovers. But again, trying to make plays, it's going to happen when you have the ball in your hand like that. Free throws has always been a problem for him. But man, this wasn't a great game. I mean, you look at the box score and you say 31 points, 9, 13. People would die for those numbers. But I mean, y'all went to the overtime with the Wizards. and lost. This is nothing to like gawk over. Not even gonna lie to you.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, I'm kidding with the Wash King stuff, but I mean, this game was definitely problematic, and it's not the first time we've seen him just kind of like coast through a game. But the way that he was doing, usually he coasts through a game in the middle of the game, so that at the end of the game he could start playing intense defense. And I mean, he did play 43 minutes. It obviously was a very long night for him, but it was just kind of shot. You know, it's one thing when he's missing the free throw at the end of regulation to it looked like they were gonna lose a game because of that. Yeah, that's one thing, but the multiple defensive plays in a row where it's not even like he's like half-assing it. Like, he's literally standing there like a statue as a player drives right in front of him. It's just like kind of crazy stuff. So, you know what? Maybe that was the difference, but pretty sure LeBron's going to win them a few games in the next couple of weeks anyway, because he's LeBron.
Join us this Saturday for an all-new episode of The Athletic NBA Show, Saturday Slam and Jam, hosted by me, Andrew Schlecht. I'll be joined by my co-hosts Alex Spears and many of the Athletic beat writers that you know and love. We will recap the week of the NBA, play some NBA trivia, and just overall talk about the league that we love most. So while you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee on Saturday morning, listen to Saturday Slam and Jam on the Athletic NBA Show.
Okay, let's head over to Charlotte, where the Jazz stomped out the Hornets 132-110. We had the Jazz bench trio of Jingles, Clarkson, and Niang, all with 21 points, or only 20 for Clarkson in this game. Malik Monk had 20 points off the bench for Charlotte. But it was LaMelo Ball who was the center point of the most important moment of the game, Trey.
Yeah, man. I don't even know where to start with this game, bro. Like, just the 41-11 run was insane. Like, this is crazy. I mean, I'm still kind of tripping off the no love for Hayward, too, still getting boos. Just get over your ex, man. Get over your ex in this situation. Utah just would not let it go. But the LaMelo Ball play, just, you know, calling Mike Conley too little, sparked something. And I think the Jazz didn't like that, and it woke up a bear because, you know, I started off with 26-2 in the fourth, and then it just kept going, and they were flamethrowing, dude. They shot 28 for 55 from three. It's like over 50%, man.
The Hornets, they had a lead with like a minute left in the third quarter, and then – cut to about 4 minutes later in the game and Utah's up 20. I mean, it was just like, it was a bloodbath and it was quick.
Oh, it wouldn't stop. It wouldn't stop. I'm watching and I just probably blinked maybe twice, dude, and just bombing threes. You know, I was talking about Jordan Clarkson having 20 off the bench and then, you know, Jingles, and then you go to Yang, and then just guys were just making it happen. And then you got Gobert dunking, and, you know, you look up and this team is just coasting. And they're really good. I mean, probably the best chemistry out there outside of the Lakers. And just rolling through teams, you know, I regurgitated and said that they would win 27 straight. They didn't. They fell short. But I think they start another streak after this.
Yeah, I mean, 24-6 ain't bad. And you know what? If George Niang is going to shoot 7-for-7 from three, that's probably going to help. Actually, only those three guys that combined for 62 points, only two of those field goals were non-threes. Pretty good night for Utah. Pretty bad night for Charlotte in that, one, they were in a competitive game and then blew it. And two, Gordon Hayward, who was by far their best player in this game, he shot 9-for-15 from the field in only 26 minutes. And you're wondering why only 26 minutes. So he hit the floor and re-aggravated an injury in his right hand. And James Borrego, the coach of the Hornets, said after the game that they're pretty concerned about this injury. You'll remember that he broke his pinky against the Raptors in the preseason this year. He also broke his hand last year when he was playing in Boston when he collided with LaMarcus Aldridge at San Antonio, and he had to have surgery on that, was out for a while. So he's had a history of hand injuries. And I mean, for a guy that just has had a bad injury history and he's having such a, you know, kind of really like a borderline all-star season and really proved his worth in the free agent market this year, he's really putting up when they told him to put up or shut up. But that's obviously really concerning if he has to end up missing time because of an injury on his shooting hand.
Yeah, please bubble wrap him. I mean, he's playing pretty well, and I had him on, you know, all-star reserves, and now if he has to miss some games, then that would suck.
Well, as long as they're not in Utah, because it was weird hearing boos, and I'm thinking, wait, they have boos programmed into the pumped in crowd noise? And then I remembered, oh yeah, there's fans in the stands, and it doesn't matter how many fans are in the stands in Utah, there's just enough for them to boo Gordon Hayward.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
We are joined by the one and only John Krasinski, who covers the Wolves for The Athletic. And John, congrats on breaking one of the most shocking stories of the year, which is the Wolves firing Ryan Saunders late at night in the middle of the season. And then immediately hiring Chris Finch away from the Raptors bench in what appears to be the first time that someone's been hired off of another team's bench in the middle of the season in over a decade. So I guess the first question is, why did we get to this point?
Yeah, I think, Jared, that it's not essentially a surprise that Ryan Saunders was fired, not even that he was fired midseason. A little surprising, obviously, that Chris Finch, as you alluded to, was plucked from an opposing bench to be brought in as the permanent replacement. But they basically, the Wolves, got to a point where they are 7-24. They have the worst record in the NBA, and there's just only so much losing a franchise can take. And they have had an unbelievable amount of bad luck with injuries, with COVID, missing Karl Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell have only played 5 games together in a year. There's been a lot of things that are out of Ryan Saunders' control. But as you know, Jared, in the NBA, you can't fire the players. The coach is often the first head to roll. And that's the case here. They have lost 10 of their last 12 games, and the continue to have the same mistakes happen over and over in the fourth quarters. And so Gerson Rosas felt that it was just time to make a move, and he couldn't see any more of it.
But why do they have to make this move now? Because you noted in what was a phenomenal piece on The Athletic right after this happened that was very thorough for a breaking news story, but you noted how the fans were upset. And obviously, you don't really feel fan pressure these days nearly as much because you're not in the stands booing, unless you're a Utah Jazz fan watching Gordon Hayward. But what kind of pressure was there? Was there internal pressure? Was it just the fact that Rosas wanted to see the team on an upward trajectory?
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, they have Karl Anthony Towns in the second year of a max deal, and they want to be building towards something. Now, Gerson Rosas said before the season, he did not expect that the playoffs were a mandate this year. He didn't think that that was the case for the youngest roster in the league, one that was still kind of trying to find its identity. But he also certainly didn't expect 7-24. And so what I think Rosas is doing in terms of making this move now and not waiting till the end of the season is basically sending a message that there are higher expectations. I don't think that, you know, you can expect Chris Finch to come in here and light the world on fire and the Wolves win, you know, 10 out of 14 and start to show some life that way. But I do think that there needs to be a base level of competence. And we were not really seeing that. I think they had an uptick in competitiveness. There's no question. They've been losing a lot of close games lately, but they just have not been able to get over the hump. And so Gerson Rosas wants to see more wins. You can certainly argue that losses would help them more down the stretch, but I think they're looking at Karl Anthony Towns in his sixth season and saying, we got to start showing that we're on a path that Cat can see as viable for the future. And, you know, if they were to just limp to the worst record in the league again, I think that they would put themselves in a position to really have some pressure put on them by Towns and, you know, certainly by the owner, who has not seen much from this new regime over the first year and a half. And so just a lot of kind of internal pressures, I think, that they're feeling and that they felt like they had to start moving on this to kind of start to address those.
It's almost a catch-22, but I guess the positive thing about this year's draft is that there's so many good prospects that you can rise up to like fifth or sixth or something like that, have enough progress during the season to make everyone happy, but still get a great cornerstone, even if it's not necessarily a Cade Cunningham.
Remember, the Wolves have their first-round pick only if it's 1-3. If it's not top three this year, it goes to the Warriors in the Wiggins-Russell trade. So that is, yeah, a very kind of heavy weight that is, you know, kind of lording over this whole thing. Again, I think it points to, boy, losses would be okay. But I think that they just think that internally, the damage that may be done with Karl Anthony Towns, with the owner that is getting a little more impatient, that is taking precedence over a pick that is in the top 10, which I agree with you. If they had the 7th overall pick in this draft, I think they could feel really good about getting a really good player at that spot.
Well, so I guess the mandate to Chris Finch is do a good job, but not too good of a job too fast.
That's right. I think, yeah, it's like set an identity here and set a path forward to build on. And that's all they're asking.
So what is that path forward? What is he going to bring to the table? What are they looking for out of him?
Yeah, so we talked to him tonight in his introductory press conference, and basically he and Gerson Rosas really do see eye to eye in how they want an offense to run. Everywhere that Chris Finch has gone, Houston, Rio Grande Valley in the G League, Denver, New Orleans, Toronto, every place he's won as an assistant, he has seen that team has seen a marked increase in offensive efficiency. And the Timberwolves have the 28th ranked offense in the league this year. And so that's what I think they want to see first and foremost, is see Chris Finch come in, get them better organized, get them into sets a little quicker, a little easier, maximize Karl-Anthony Towns. He played exceedingly well against the Knicks the other night in the fourth quarter with 15 points and 9 rebounds in that quarter alone. But prior to that, the previous two games, he had 2 shots in the fourth quarter against Toronto. He had no shots in the fourth quarter against Indiana. So they want to make sure that he is featured all of the time. They want to get Anthony Edwards in spots where he's a little more comfortable. But I think you're going to see a heavy emphasis on increasing the offensive output, because it's been largely pretty bad for most of this season.
Sure. And this is a team whose roster is, you know, built on a lot of real top tier offensive talents, with Cat, Anthony Edwards, Jake Layman, obviously, D'Angelo Russell. So they really need to dominate with their offense. But speaking of offense, there was some offense taken by notably Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, where David Vanterpool, who is a pretty renowned coaching candidate, who's an assistant coach on that Wolves staff, someone who, like Finch, interviewed for the job before it was given to Saunders in 2019, and they were surprised that he was just kind of passed over, and the process wasn't even opened up to him and other notably minority and particularly black coaching candidates. So how has that narrative been handled? And what has the messaging been on that narrative?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're taking some bullets right now because of it. And I think the scrutiny is deserved. What Gerson Rosa said today is that his track record for diversity speaks for itself. And in some ways it does. They have an incredibly diverse front office with a couple of Indian Americans. You have an African American assistant GM and Joe Branch. The coaching staff underneath Ryan Saunders and now underneath Chris Finch is diverse, with Vanterpool and Kevin Burleson. And so they have analytics, members of the analytics department that are African American. And so they have a very diverse outfit. And they have been at the forefront of social justice response to George Floyd's death. So a lot of that they have going for them. Of course, though, the head coach is one of the prime big time spots in an organization. And they just went through a situation where they didn't conduct a single interview other than Chris Finch. He is a white guy who's 51 years old and is a buddy of Gerson Rosas's. And so when you make that move, you're going to draw scrutiny, one, for passing over David Vanterpool, and two, just for not opening it up to the larger coaching population and trying to get other people a chance, people of color a chance to interview. I think Gerson is a little more vulnerable, quite frankly, on not opening up the process to outside candidates of color than it is Vanterpool, because what he can say about Vanterpool is that he has had a ringside seat for David Vanterpool's work for the last 18 months. And as well regarded as he was when he came in here, Rosas has worked directly with him. And so he has made the decision that Chris Finch is more qualified to be the head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves and for what Gerson Rosas wants than David Vanterpool is. He may be totally wrong about that. That is a judgment call on his part, but you can't say that he has not given David Vanterpool full consideration for this job. He has. He's been around him. He knows what he's like. He knows how he relates to players. Karl-Anthony Towns, D'Angelo Russell really like David Vanterpool, just like Dame and CJ like David Vanterpool. But for whatever reason, Rosas has determined that he's not it. It's harder for him to answer why he wouldn't go look at Jamal Mosley from Dallas or Johnny Bryant from New York or Phil Handy from the Lakers or any number of highly qualified Black or candidates of color. And he doesn't really have a good answer for that. It's just that he really believes in Chris Finch, that this is the guy that he wanted, and he's willing to take the criticism that comes from it to get Chris Finch on staff.
That's John Krasinski. When he writes, you have to read it. Thanks, John.
Thanks, Jared.
Getting buckets.
All right, time to get some buckets with Trey. Trey, what do we got?
Man, so we got actually a bucket list, man. I don't even know where to start. We got Giannis Antetokounmpo. We got Russell Westbrook. We got Kyrie Irving, James Harden, Terry Rozier, Jamal Murray. I actually want to talk about Jamal Murray. Man, he had a crazy game. I don't even think I've seen a game like that since Michael Jordan, man. Just like efficient and just kind of not missing anything. What did he end up doing the other night?
He had a 50-piece.
50-piece nuggets right there. You know what I'm saying? That was a combo meal that you basically wanted, you know. So he was definitely getting buckets.
50-piece nuggets. That sounds like me stoned in high school trying to go to the McDonald's drive-thru. And then let's talk about Terry Rozier, because the guy that everybody thought was getting terribly overpaid when he got his deal last year, he had 34 points on February 10th, 41 points on February 12th, 33 points on February 14th, 36 points in the game winner on February 20th, and then only 12 points last night. But, I mean, the guy is on an unbelievable run.
Look, if we ignore last night, he's a buckito. You know what I mean? He's a bucket. He's proven. He's earning his money. He's getting comfortable in the little system. Team has more faith in him, and he's able to do his thing. And it's making the front office look smart. So at the end of the day, he's getting buckets straight up. There's nothing else to say about that. You know, when the leash is short and they letting him rock out, Scary Terry is the guy to have the ball in the hand.
All right. Well, obviously there's a guy that we know can get those buckets. That's Giannis, the back-to-back MVP. You know, this year there's been a little concern about his ability to create off the dribble and get to the rack and make good offense. Well, in the first half on Sunday, he had 15 free throw attempts in the entire first half. So it looks like Giannis is kind of back to doing what he does best.
Yeah. I mean, Giannis is going to be Giannis. I mean, he was the MVP for a reason. Most people think that all he can do is dunk, but hey, Until you guys can stop it, Giannis, keep dunking, brother.
All right. Well, we're going to have to stop it there. So that's going to do it for today's show. Do not forget about all the other basketball shows across the Athletic Podcast Network. We still have your favorite shows like the Athletic NBA show, which obviously features Trey on Monday mornings. We have No Dunks. We have House of Strauss, plus over a dozen team-specific shows available from some of your favorite Athletic beat writers. And don't forget to follow us on the app where you can get notifications for new episodes, and you can utilize that podcast episode comment section. If you're not a member of The Athletic, you're in luck, because you can get all of our pods ad-free at the app, plus some fantastic writing across all major sports, all for a super low price. Get your subscription today at theathletic.com/dailyding. Thank you, as always, for waking up with us. Trey, get us out of here.
Ding, ding.